Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, check out our new politics website. It's afreecountry.org. There's always something interesting to read there and always something interesting to do. Right now, you can take part in our group blog about the Tea Party. The question is, true or false, the Tea Party is good for America? Our guest bloggers include Marcos Melitzas from the progressive website, The Daily Coast, and Tea Party activist Lenny McAllister. So go to the site and add your voice to the mix, and we'll talk about it on tomorrow's radio show, too. But happening right now online, our group blog on the true-false proposition, the Tea Party is good for America. Go to itsafreecountry.org. New York City's council is considering a bill to require employers to offer paid sick leave to their employees. It has enough sponsors to pass without a veto threat, but first, Speaker Christine Quinn has to be convinced to bring it up for a vote. Advocates of the bill point to studies showing no negative impact on businesses, but the council has been waiting for the business group, the Partnership for New York City, to present a study it commissioned, and it is now out. Perhaps not surprisingly, this business group study showed the number of people without paid leave to be much smaller and the cost to businesses to be much higher than other people think. So let's let each side defend their own studies. We are joined now by Catherine Wild, President and CEO of the Partnership for New York City, and by Dan Morris, Communications Director for the progressive advocacy group, the Drum Major Institute. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Hello.
Thank you, Brian.
First, just by way of background, Kathy, what would the bill require of employers very specifically?
Well, essentially, the bill requires that every employer in New York City, every private sector employer in New York City, nonprofit and for-profit, provide a minimum of paid sick days to all employees who work more than 80 hours a year for them. So we're talking about part-time, full-time, salaried employees, and that they would provide, that businesses with 20 employees or more would provide 9 days of paid sick leave, and businesses with less than 20 employees would provide 5 paid sick days. And then it has a number of specific requirements. Those sick days, and the bill came out of concern about swine flu and whether people who were ill, particularly restaurant workers, were not able to take time off from work when they were sick because they needed a paycheck, they didn't have paid time, or fear of being fired if they didn't show up for work when they were ill. So
my understanding is that was not the genesis of the bill. People had wanted this for a long time, but that certainly added fuel to their fire.
So that was what precipitated the bill being introduced, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Kathy, give me...
That's actually not true. Brian, you're absolutely right. I mean, there was a longstanding interest in this issue, and a number of different key stakeholders and influencers from around the city for several years now have been discussing this issue and looking very closely at the track record of success and positive impact in San Francisco. So it's completely disingenuous and misleading to start with swine flu and to frame that as somehow the main rationale for this bill. That's completely not true.
Well, let me let you each do your...
Let's say the bill was never introduced before the swine and never got sponsors, and the primary reason for most sponsors signing on that I've spoken to was concern about the public health issue.
Let's do some of your dueling data. Kathy, give me the top-line results of what you see in the study that you did as far as the impact of a paid sick leave law on workers and employers.
Well, first I'd like to say we're the only study that has talked to employers. And the reason we undertook this effort was because, as Dan says, advocacy groups that have an agenda had been making a case for mandatory paid sick leave in New York City and not surveying employers. And so we thought it was important to understand, one, what are current practices among employers in the city, and two, most important, to recognize that one size fits all in legislation was going to be very difficult in terms of its application to different industries, that different industries have very different employment practices and relationships, and so we went out really to find out what those differences were and how the bill would affect specific industries and how it would affect small business as compared to large business. And what we concluded as a result of interviews with employers of more than 400,000 New Yorkers, about 13% of the workforce, what we concluded was that, in fact, there are wide-ranging impacts. In a number of cases, the bill would require employers that already offer paid time, some of them unlimited paid time, it would add another 9 days or 5 days of paid sick leave because it was discretionary time where a worker could take his time, whether for family illness, for his own illness, or for vacation. It's all mixed in. Depends on the bargain with the employer. So there was a wide range of different kinds of employment relationships that were not consistent with the terms of the bill, problem number one, and expensive for those employers that are already offering their employees time off. And number two, there are certain industries where the margins are so thin and the relationships with particularly tipped employees, whether it's a restaurant or a hairdresser, that it's the cost of compliance is very high because they are right now using flexible time schedules. They have informal arrangements. It's kind of the family business that really gets hit.
Do you want to get more specific about who with small margins of profit would be the most impacted, and are you predicting that anybody would have to close? Because certainly you're talking to at least some large percentage of the listeners who were thinking, well, gosh, I didn't know that not everybody could get sick leave. And that seems like it would be a matter of basic human rights or human decency, that if you're sick a small number of days a year, that you get paid for not coming to work.
As I said, 88% of employees in New York City, according to our survey, do get time off when they're sick. So you are right. The vast majority of employees in the city get that. The group that does not get it tend to be concentrated in a couple of areas, who have special work relationships or who have bargained either through their unions or through with their individual employers, where they get higher hourly wages in return for for not having paid sick leave. So they have benefit packages that are simply different and don't. But 12% we estimated from the survey responses, primarily in small business, tipped employees in the hospitality and restaurant industry, and in the construction industry. And construction, as you know, is one of those industries with very sporadic work schedules on kind of an as-needed basis. And those are the areas where the industries that have the highest degree of impact, and where there is, and many of them, and small retail, small business, small retail, small nonprofits, the under 20 employees.
Yeah, Brian, I'd love to be able to weigh in at some point.
Dan, you're looking at a different study, right?
Well, let's just back up a bit because, again, unfortunately, we're still in the realm of disingenuousness and a number of misleading claims.
I don't appreciate that.
Well,
I'm
sorry, Kathy, it is because you say, for example, no one has ever done a study of paid sick leave talking to employers, particularly those who are most affected. It turns out the Urban Institute did a study.
Oh, I meant New York. They've done one in California.
No. But this is really important to understand because San Francisco is where we have now several years of hard impact data and evidence and scores of testimonies from small business owners and prominent leaders of restaurant associations and the Chamber of Commerce, and there's now a broad consensus that paid sick leave is not a burden in terms of cost, and it's not something that in any way is going to prevent job growth or business growth. That's what our study out this week shows, but it's part of a much broader body of research that is data-driven, evidence-backed.
Well, Dan, how do you back that up? Because if Catherine's study, the partnership study, finds that construction businesses and small retail with marginal profits might actually suffer under, a paid sick leave law, and there are different kinds of more informal arrangements between employers and employees, and this would add to the number of paid days off. Do you dispute that numerically?
I do, and again, I'm sure Kathy's not going to appreciate this, but I have to say it. I wouldn't call what the partnership put out this week a study. It was an online survey, and it was posted at Crain's New York Business, which is one of the most staunchly pro-business publications in New York, and on the websites of local chambers of commerce.
Hang on, one at a time. Kathy, you will be able to, but let
of the study.
Kathy, am I wrong?
So, Kathy, you're disputing that what you did was a survey of employers. You just referred to it as such, which, in fact, is the accurate way of characterizing it. So in that case, you've moved outside the realm of disingenuousness, and you're being quite truthful, which is appreciated. But again, the problem here is that this frankly was incredibly biased and rigged from the get-go. And let's talk about the employers
Dan, hang on for one second, because I want to clear up this point. Kathy, the survey that you did of employers, was it a scientific randomized survey, or was it an online poll?
We did not have time to do that because the council wanted a response.
So it was self-selected, only people who volunteered to answer answered.
What we did was we went out to the business improvement districts throughout the five boroughs, the chambers of commerce throughout the five boroughs, all the professional associations, the hospital association, the hotel association, the university association, a broad range of professional organizations, and asked them to solicit their membership on a totally open basis. We also offered, the Crain's thing, having it on their website, was the least of it. It was basically the industry associations, the local business improvement districts, the local chamber of commerce, Hispanic chamber of commerce, reached out to their membership and asked them to participate. We had to do this in August because the council wanted us to meet a September deadline. So it was a slow time. In spite of that, we had a great...
Did we lose you? Kathy, are you there? Did we lose Dan? Dan, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, well, we'll try to get her line back, and we only have a couple of minutes left. Oh, Kathy, I think we lost your line somehow.
Okay. No, I'm here.
So, Dan Morris, given just...
Let me just weigh in really briefly. I mean, it's certainly true that several networks that work closely with chambers of commerce were tapped. But again, this is a self-selecting group.
Nonprofit, health,
survey,
hospital,
and
educational.
But
let's talk about the immigrant community and the number of small business owners who work closely with a remarkable organization, Make the Road New York, who put out a searing indictment of your survey yesterday, saying we don't know who the partnership is. They never called us. They never spoke to us. I mean, can you address that, Kathy, on the
record?
Absolutely.
The
business
improvement districts and the minority chambers of commerce throughout the five boroughs.
That's not what I'm asking, Kathy.
Okay, you know what?
And immigrant small business owners.
I'm going to make an executive decision here, since we only have a few minutes left, and that is not to go round and round and round and round on this point of the methodology. I think we have some of the controversies surrounding the methodology on the table, and I want to get to a little bit more of the content and the arguments for a paid sick time bill for New York City before we run out of time. And Dan Morris, given the shaky state of the economy, is this the right time to add a burden, no matter how small you might think it would be, to businesses as a matter of law, especially small businesses?
Well, look, I mean, it's certainly a fair point. And let me say that where we agree with an organization like the partnership and the chambers of commerce is, okay, we need to take the concerns of small business seriously. So, in fact, for well over a year or so now, that's exactly what we've been doing. So there have been a couple of key claims coming from organizations like the partnership, which, again, we've taken very seriously. First, that paid sick leave is going to prevent job growth, and second, that it's going to prevent business growth. Both of those claims related to this issue of whether businesses, particularly smaller businesses, could absorb the cost or the burden. Okay, so we've investigated this looking at San Francisco. Now, again, I know that Kathy doesn't want to talk about San Francisco, but I'm sorry, this is the model.
I'm happy to talk about San Francisco, but I don't think it's relevant to New York.
It's absolutely irrelevant. It's relevant for a number of reasons. Let me mention a couple. First, because the bill on the council is modeled exactly on the bill, the law in San Francisco. And secondly, and really more persuasively, there's now several years of impact data, hard evidence, and that's what we've looked at. We've looked at data coming from the Census Bureau. We looked at California employment data.
Numbers say that employment actually grew faster in San Francisco since that paid sick time leave bill was passed than it did in surrounding areas without paid leave?
Absolutely. Now, again,
but the chart in your own report showed that small restaurants lost jobs and large restaurants were the ones that gained it. That's our point. This does have effects. Small business is disproportionately affected. If you look in your own report, it shows
that. No, that's absolutely not true. That's absolutely not true. And again,
well, look at the chart on page.
Well, I've actually
read
it.
Page 7 of your report.
And unlike in what you put out in the unscientific opinion survey, we actually link directly to our data, and it's not a self-selecting group of people who were polled based on how they feel about the issue. No, the reality is that there has not been any significant burden here that has contributed to job loss or the loss of business growth. And the reality is that this is a policy that, look, even prominent business leaders, okay, the head of the Golden Gate Restaurant Association has said, look, this is the best public policy for the least cost. Were we concerned at first? Absolutely. Now that we've seen it in action working, mm-hmm. and we've seen the city focus on implementation in a very smart way, doing a lot of direct outreach to community leaders, small business owners, and the like. This has gone very well.
Very Kathy Weil, very briefly.
It's just
were
in
you
the
saying
numbers.
It's they, not relevant to New York whether this worked in San Francisco?
San Francisco is 55% higher median family income than New York. It's a tenth the size of New York, and their comparison studies looked at the last 3 years, the economic growth in San Francisco versus the five counties surrounding it. Everybody who's been alive in the last 3 years knows the crisis that California suburbs have been going through economically and in terms of their real estate crisis that would totally skew. None of that was adjusted for. They used regular census statistic numbers, which anybody could use. I just say it's not relevant. What we did was ask real employers in New York City who employ close to 500,000 New Yorkers of all sizes from all industries, 34% of them nonprofit. We reached out through their professional associations, community organizations, representative groups to ask them what are their current practices, not what they thought of the legislation, what are their current practices, and what are their current costs. And then Ernst & Young was able to take that, weight the industries, weight it by small business versus large business, look at hourly, tipped, part-time, and full-time salaried employees. The good news is among mid- and large-sized employers over 20 people, 95% of New Yorkers have paid time that they can use for sick leave.
We are over time already.
Again,
I just want to get 15.
Primarily at larger businesses.
I want to get just 15 seconds from each of you on the politics. Yeah. Kathy Weil, if city council has the votes, a veto-proof majority, it's up to Christine Quinn, the speaker, to bring it up or not. Are you going to prevent her from doing it effectively?
Absolutely not. The city council needs the facts from employers to make up their minds. I think they have to talk to the small businesses in their neighborhoods, the restaurants, the small contractors, the people that are going to be affected. We now know that this is going to equal the size of the MTA payroll tax.
Dan,
that's the average imposition. And she's got to talk to them and find out, and the council members
Dan,
have
you
to
want,
talk to them.
You want her to bring it up. You're going to get her to do it?
Well, look, I mean, we're a nonpartisan group, but we do support the bill, and we've been in regular contact with the speaker's office and with several council members, just briefing them on our work, and we think at this point there is broad consensus in the research community among a number of nonpartisan organizations that this bill is going to be something that is a boost both to businesses and to working people. So we hope that it comes up for a vote soon.
Well, that was not the easiest thing that any of us are going to do today. Kathryn Weil, President and CEO of the Partnership for New York City, Dan Morris, Communications Director for the Drum Major Institute. Thank you both.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, shock of shocks, horror of horrors. The government says palm juice doesn't really keep you healthy. We'll get details.